All right. Hello, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. There's a couple of microphones floating around the tables here tonight, and they're not turned on, so make sure you turn them on if there's one in front of you. And as we speak, if you have something to say, make sure you grab one of the mics and speak into it. I'm trying to record it on an audio tape, and it would certainly help the audience hear us if it's turned on. I think right on the very top of each one of those. So please use those. That would be most beneficial. Thanks again for coming tonight. It's been a while since we've seen you last. It was last October, and a lot of things have transpired in the last couple of months, and we wanted to bring you guys as a task force up to speed, and then before we're gone tonight, get your opinions on whether or not we're on the right track and we got good traction on this, or if there's something that needs to be worked on, or if we're really way off track with something. And so we're going to spend the majority of tonight going through that stuff. But before starting that, I'd like to go over, just give you guys a real quick update of what's happened since October. Shortly after your last task force meeting, the county took the last version, that version of regulations that we put in front of you, which is kind of a really schematic draft, and we put it out for the public to provide comment to us on for most of the month of November. And around November 21st, we invited the public to come in and meet with us at an open house session or through private meetings to come in and share their thoughts on where they thought the regulations stood at that time. And so for most of November, our efforts were trying to understand what people outside of this group thought about these proposed regulations. That went fairly well, and during the month of December, we took what we learned from this task force, as well as what our staff has learned by additional studies or what the State Department of Health and Environment and COGCC have worked on, and we took and refined, keeping in mind that you guys said, let's keep a balanced approach to this. We took the stuff that we've learned, we've refined all the language, updated it, cleaned it up, and made it more look more like a set of regulations than it did the last time you saw it. So tonight we want to share that information with you and get your feedback on that. So that was what happened during the month of December. And then in January, around January 6th, we reposted this new version. We're calling it version 2 of the draft regulations. We posted that back online to allow the public an opportunity to comment. That comment period closes tomorrow. We sent it to you all, and as well as we met with the Board of County Commissioners and the Planning Commission, because they haven't seen any of this until that night. And we went over what we'd done with all of you guys and what we came up with, and we tried to get some feedback off of them. And what we found out from the Planning Commission was, for the most part, we're on a good track. They think that you guys did a lot of wonderful work and that the staff was working well with you guys. They had some comments on setbacks and some other things as well. And so we will be making some modifications. We'll touch base as we go through tonight, each of these sections. We'll touch base on what the Planning Commission might have suggested as possible changes, or the Board of County Commissioners did, and try to give you some idea of where they stood on those types of issues. Again, today's meeting is just to find out from you where you guys think we stand. We're going to have some votes, and depending upon how those votes go, we'll either move fast through a section or we'll have to talk a little bit about each of these sections as we move through. I have voting sheets, and we'll talk about those in a few minutes, how to do that, so that we can keep track of what you guys do vote on, and so that we can share that information with the Board of County Commissioners and the Planning Commission so they can at least understand where you guys came out of this on. So with that, I think we'll go ahead and get started. I've sat in front of you all a copy of, and you probably had a copy, but I brought an extra copy just in case, of the current proposed Section 17, which is the regulations that we have come up as a draft. And I would like to hand out, if you can pass this around real quick. If you're a voting member, take one of those. And I'll ask that you keep track of your own personal vote so that when we're done, I can tally them up, because it's kind of hard to sit here and tally and keep track of other things. But that will help us. So, and if you have to leave, feel free to take that with you and send it back to me with your votes. I'd appreciate it. So with that, I'm going to kind of just delve into this, unless Leslie or Leah or Frank have anything to add to this. I'm going to jump in. Frank's going to leave a little bit early. He has to be out here at 5. The rest of us will stick around and answer any of your questions that you might have. So we're going to just jump in. Page 1. All sections of our land use code start with an intent and purpose section. And the idea is there is to give an idea of why this regulation is there and what is its purpose. And so real briefly, changes that are potentially going to be made to that as a result of staff discussion, as well as some of our discussion with the Board of County Commissioners, was that in the first sentence under intent, it talks about new oil and gas facilities, and then after that, it talks about including recompletions. And we're stumbling around what a recompletion is. There's not really a clear definition even by COGCC on what a recompletion is. We kind of know what it is. It's when you go back into the hole and you redefine the hole by either raising it or lowering it to hit a different resource. It could have some surface impacts, but most of that's downhole. And so how much of that we really want to understand and have as a part of application. If it's downhole, we really don't want to get into it. We want to deal with surface impacts. So a recompletion could have very minimal impact on the surface other than during the drilling stage. And so we are going to strike all the terms, including recompletions, throughout the document and just leave new oil and gas facilities as the term to be used. And then we will provide a definition. Before we get to the Planning Commission, we're wrestling with the definition as to what a new facility is and what it is not. Also in that section, there was some discussion about this group said that the intent should include the language protects private property rights. So I just wanted to point out that was in there, including the public health, safety, and welfare, and the environment and wildlife. And there's been a lot of discussion in the emails that I received, both from the public and from others, about this being a transparent process. What you don't see a whole lot in this code is where the process and the procedures are for how you process an application. And it's not that we're intending not to do it. It just comes in a separate part of our code. So in section 17.2, we point out that this will require a special review application, and how you submit that application and the requirements of that application are defined in section 4 of our code. And it is a highly transparent public hearing process. So it's important that I just point out to everybody that, you know, feel free to look at section 4 when you get a chance. It'll tell you how that process looks. So with that, I'm going to start with section 17.1, and I'm going to ask y'all to really quickly, I'm going to put it up on the screen here. We're going to have, this is the paper. This is the voting sheet that I have handed to you. I'm going to ask you just to put an X when we go through the voting in which box. So as we go through, if you think something's ready, put a mark in the ready box, or mostly ready, meaning there might be some minor revisions that have to happen, or not ready, meaning there's some substantial work that we don't agree on that section. And so the voting options, as I'm putting them up here on the screen, we'll go through each of these options here. So as we vote, those are your three votes, starting at the top being you support it, the middle you need minor modifications, and then the third we're off track. And so we'll take a vote and see where everybody's at on each one of those. And so with that, I'll start with the intent and purpose section. We're going to look at this as an entire section, starting with the intent, the authority, the purpose, applicability, and severability, given those things I just discussed. And hopefully having you guys have had a chance to read this, do you believe that this subsection of the code as presented is ready for the consideration by the Planning Commission? If you are, please raise your hand. Yes, sir. Yes. If you believe that it's ready, I just ask that you please raise your hand. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, once you're done, you'll make your own vote on there. But for discussion purpose, I want to see a show of hands. So we can discuss what needs to be discussed. So I get to vote. You're a liaison, right? Liaisons don't get to vote.
Even during the discussion process.
I think in the holding up hands, I'll consider it. Yes, that's fine. If you have something to add to the discussion, yes. Okay? So those that believe that section 17.1, the intent and purpose section, is ready for consideration by the Planning Commission, would you please raise your hand? Okay. All right. I got two on that.
So, Matt, I take it you can't
answer. We'll go through questions. So, what I'm going to do is we're going to go through and we're going to vote on each one of these three categories. If the majority of the questions fall on the mostly ready, then we're going to find out what needs to be changed in order to maybe change that position. Okay? So if you think it's mostly ready, it might require some minor modifications. Please raise your hand. Okay? And if you believe that it's not ready, one. Okay. All right, so I got to think. 1, 2. Can you help me count? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We got 11, so 3, so 7 in the middle. So it sounds like 7 of you think it's mostly ready and 1 believes it's not ready. So I'll go around the table real quickly, and I'll ask those people that didn't think it was ready why they think that it isn't ready and what should be changed with that. So we'll start over here. Thomas, if you want to lead off this first discussion.
There's just some wording.
Is it on? Can you? It'll say on the top there. Sorry. Just grab.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on now.
I think it's mostly ready. I was just a little concerned about the wording in 17.1c.2 that says that provide for the managed development, installation, maintenance, modification, reclamation, and removal of oil and gas without unreasonable discrimination against oil and gas developers and operators. How is unreasonable discrimination, you know, defined? And how, you know, that's a very vague term. So that was just something that would be hard to judge, I think. What is unreasonable?
Okay.
I thought it was mostly ready. A couple things that stand out is some of the language. Although we wanted to include, as a majority, protect private property rights and then without unreasonably discriminating. I feel like having some of those things in the purpose of a regulation still has that sense of fostering that 181 is trying to get away from.
So. Okay, good point. Thanks. Doug?
This may not be the exact perfect section to talk about this, but I said not ready because I think it's really important to define what kind of oil and gas. I'm concerned with striking recompletion. Complete a well, you bring in heavy equipment, you're drilling. I just think that.
I think we're going to just call it an oil and gas operation, and then we'll come up with a definition for oil and gas operation and whether or not recompletions. I didn't want to put it up on the screen. I have what the OGCC says, and it has in there workovers and recompletions and those types of things. The thing is if it's really just a downhole activity and it doesn't have a lot of surface impact except for maybe a temporary impact, then are we really going to go through a new application process with that, or is that good to go with an administrative process? We haven't got to that detail. We're kind of struggling with a couple of those issues. So, you know, but I hear what you're saying. Uh-huh. Yep.
So I too
exploration was included in
have some concerns about putting
protecting private property rights with protecting public health, safety, and welfare, because those are often at odds with each other. And there's good conflict about what a person does on their private property and how it impacts the community. That's what we're talking about, like with odors especially. So I think that there's
Could you would it help? I'm just green light thinking to talk about balancing private property rights against the protection of public health, safety, and welfare issues. I mean, it could be as simple as that kind of a correction.
You know, want to protect private property rights, but I think SB1 really focuses on public safety.
And anything to add to that?
Nothing to add, and I just didn't vote because I'm a non-voter.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, my comment.
Can you grab that mic and talk into that mic? Thank you.
My comments generally reflect what everybody else has said. I think Section C2 and C4 probably can be combined in some way. I kind of see the intent of what you have in saying without unreasonably discriminating against oil and gas developers, you want to protect the private property rights. I think what you're looking for is language saying you're wanting to reasonably regulate to promote and protect public safety and that kind of thing, while also balancing the rights of property owners and mineral owners within the scope of those regulations. So I think it's my only objection was trying to fine-tune
a little bit of wordsmithing
that language between C2 and C4.
Okay, so go back to maybe a balanced approach to. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. Kate, did you have anything? Is mic on?
No, I forgot.
Turn it on. That's fine.
Yeah, the one area that I saw was C3, where it says minimize to the maximum extent possible the nuisance effects.
Uh-huh.
Or the nuisance effects. I think it could be reworded to where it isn't it's all or nothing. Like, I feel like that's how that reads. The application of best available techniques and technologies to minimize.
Okay, thanks. Andy.
I have two comments. The recompletions, most recompletions occur on your older vertical wells, and they're fairly simple, maybe just a truck, not necessarily a rig, and certainly not a big rig, and essentially no surface disturbance. So if you do put recompletions in here, do you mean it to apply to the 1,000 or so? I like the idea of striking it.
Okay.
And even on a new horizontal application, they don't normally get recompleted, but if they do, there's no additional surface disturbance,
okay,
which is our purview. Second, item six, C6, calls for, this seems to imply a siting function of our regulations, locating facilities where impacts can be avoided. The rest of the code or the rest of this section doesn't talk about alternative siting or actually, it seems to deal with a location that the operator brings to the county.
Mm-hmm.
And so I question whether we should say we want to get into the strategic location. It seems to imply that the county would have the ability to specify an alternative site, which I don't think is being considered.
Okay. Yeah, 181 gives us the authority to work on siting. I think after talking to the task force, the idea was that the county wouldn't get down into the selection of siting. But I think at the very first part, in the procedurals part of looking at an application, there'll be what we call a sketch plan stage, which is the concept stage of something. And what I think we're going to ask in that stage is that the applicant come forward and say, I looked at these sites, and this is why I chose that site, and give us some information as to why. But it's not for us to make a determination as to whether or not. We want to make sure that they're strategically thinking about where wildlife is, what's happening in the environment, where housing is, and coming up as part of their development application, what's the best alternative that meets both their needs and the public's needs.
Okay, given that, I don't have a problem.
I think that's the objective, sir. We could be clearer about it.
Is this hot?
Yep.
I might have missed this in my last meeting. I got ill, missed it. So someone comes, they go through the process, and we didn't end up with a two-tier process. You got a single process, correct? Right now,
that's what we're proposing. We'll talk about that next, but go ahead.
Okay. So they can't. A group comes in and they propose a 12-well pad, and they get approved, and they drill six of those because they phase. Do they have to come back and completely reapply for 3 years later when they come in to do the other six in phase two?
No.
Or once you're approved, you're approved?
What you propose is what you get approved for, and then there will be, you know, with most of our development applications, there's a timeline for it. So if that timeline's reasonable, it can be built into the application. But, you know, if you're in a phase at 25 years out, you know, I mean, the population's going to change. Factors are going to change. We might then say that that's not a reasonable application for that phasing, but tell us what a reasonable phasing plan might look like, and then that can get approved under a one
Got
application
okay. status. I was just curious if you, because when you're talking recompletion, could someone say, well, wait a minute, you're back on the right site. Well, right. I'm really drilling the next six of the 12.
Right.
So right. So my other comment, you got the three different, four, six, and seven all have adverse impacts.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what that means,
mm-hmm.
but it's in there. Can't have an adverse impact. What's an adverse impact mean?
It's an undesirable impact onto another. If you're going to put it next to residential, it's adversely impacting that. There's a conflict between those types of things. And so how do you mitigate it? So noise is too high. So if noise was an adverse impact by virtue of proximity and the type of equipment and things that are being used, you need to mitigate that so that that adverse impact becomes less of a compatibility issue with the.
So an adverse impact is when you exceed a given limit?
What poisoned water?
Sir, this is for this group to be discussing. Please don't interject.
Oh, I thought it was
from group. No, you're not involved in that conversation. Thank you, though. That's okay. Thank you. Go ahead. There's a standard, and the idea is if you meet the standard. But if, for instance, let's talk spacing for 0.2 seconds, because I think that goes into it. If there's a setback that is required, and you are going to move into that setback, then there's a potential that you have a greater adverse impact to something. How are you going to minimize that such that if you did move closer to something, it could be set off?
So phasing and environmental.
Yeah, that's where I'm saying that without a definition somewhere in here of what is adverse, to have it three.
Okay. Sir, if you keep talking, I'm going to have you leave. Okay? This is not your meeting. Thank you. We can try to define that and make it better understandable in that context.
Sometimes as a regulation,
being three times in the, you know, that, you know, one after another, you would think, I wonder how I'm going to measure that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
That's why I wasn't ready.
All right. So. Thanks. I appreciate that. Richard, anything you wanted to add to that, sir? And then as we go through this, I know that this is the first one. We got to kind of keep moving because I want to get out, you guys out of here by 6. So we have an hour. So a lot to cover. Richard?
So usually adverse impacts is adequate language in a purpose clause, but maybe further in the details you could deal with it more specifically. As far as items 6 and 7, usually avoid, minimize, and mitigate are all in the same paragraph, mm-hmm. and that comes out of wetlands type thinking in the 80s. And so I might combine 6 and 7. And I voted for the middle group because of the policy issues around recompletion. If it's just all down the hole, then it's easy. But if there's new vertical wells and trucks, then maybe it needs to be included in the definition of new, or maybe we need to tighten the term recompletion that's borrowed from the COGCC.
Okay, thanks. All right, well, I think we got the information. So what we'll do with this information, just real quick to let you know, we'll take it in consideration as we're drafting up version 3. So some of the things like recompletions may come out. We'll add some definitions. We might clean it up. Some of the comments may not get added in there. But we will take that, and when we present to the Planning Commission our staff report, it will say these were, we'll try to identify those issues that you guys thought would get you over that hump, and maybe get it to where you move from a mostly ready to a ready stance. So thanks for that input. All right, moving on. The next step is review procedure 17.2 and required permits. Really, this section lays out lays out what the general requirements are for submitting an application, county review process. What process are we going to review to analyze these? What kind of other permits are necessary? So it's really a structural component of the code to make sure that we cover everything. When we left last, the task force, the idea was to consider having a tiered approach. And we would still like to do that. We just can't find the threshold. And given the limited number of applications that we're getting, we're not sure that right now we want to make it a tiered approach. The Board of County Commissioners felt that at this point in the Planning Commission that we might want to keep it in one review process and then amend them later to loosen them up if there needs to be something. But I think if we start thinking about recompletions not being part of that or whatnot, that might not have a large surface impact, or maybe they go through an administrative process that maybe we'll have something along those lines. So maintenance of facilities and things like that, where maybe there's a piece of equipment that has to be replaced or updated or something like that, doesn't generate the need to have a new application. It might mean that they need to come in and talk to us about permitting or something, or getting an administrative nod. But that the idea is these are new facilities that we're talking about. And so with that, I'm going to go through this one more time, and then we'll see if we can get through this a little bit more rapid on section 17.2 regarding review procedures and permits. How many of you believe that this section is ready to be presented to the Planning Commission? Okay. How many of you believe that it's mostly ready to be ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And not? Okay. All right, so let's go through. Let's be quick about this. Let's just run around real quick. We'll start over here with Richard. If it's not ready or mostly ready, why is your comments on that? Let's be quick about this. About a half minute each.
I am still interested in the tiered idea, and maybe it's asking for more precision or certainty at this point than the commissioners can tolerate or accept, but there's some stuff that probably can be done administratively below the level of a whole application.
Okay. I would concur with this gentleman here, and I'm going to pass my comments over to here because this gentleman knows a lot more about this process.
Andy?
I, I say it's not ready, Matt, because I recall at our last meeting when the special review process was brought up, the consensus of this group, and we took a vote on it, was that applications not go through the special review process. So I'm curious why now it is set in stone.
All right, sir.
I'll leave.
Thank you.
So I just recall that it was something like 10-2, we were not in favor of running all applications through the special review process.
And that was a tiered approach, but we couldn't come up with a threshold for tiered, and we still haven't been able to come up with that.
Okay.
It wasn't that we were going to eliminate special review; it was that we were going to try to find what types of applications should go through a tiered process. So we'll continue to investigate
that.
Okay,
and staff's consensus was there wasn't a way to come up with an administrative.
I've asked industry, I've asked others to give me some idea, and nobody's been able to give me, whether it's the size of the pad, the number of holes on a pad, what it is, I don't know. We haven't come up with any kind of fixed thing that gives us an indication of that at this point. That's our dilemma.
Yeah, the only thing in this section that I looked at was section D, where it says it shall not relieve the landowner or applicant. I was just curious why the landowner was now being discussed when they weren't. Maybe having the drilling rig on their property, but isn't part of the process itself.
It could be a landowner, though. We do have landowners that do apply. And so a landowner could be part of the application process. It's their responsibility as a landowner or an applicant to secure all the permits on their property.
Okay. But at that stage, they would just be an applicant landowner, right? Not, is that how I'm understanding?
To say that again, I'm sorry.
So you're saying like a landowner who would apply would be considered the applicant, right?
But if they provide a lease area to me to do my drilling operation, then I'm responsible for getting all the permits. I suppose that's a negotiated effort between them. I don't want to get between that. We want to make sure that all permits are applied for. That's the idea.
Sure. I just didn't want to create confusion of like the landowner who wasn't an applicant being responsible.
And I would hope that they negotiate that out. I'm not going to try to figure that out. I don't want to get in between that. The landowner is still responsible for their land, whether there's a lease on it or not. Right. I think if I'm an applicant on your property and I'm going to get a permit and I fail to get it, the landowner is still responsible for it. I honestly believe that that's the case.
But I don't think so. No, when you that's clear as a bell, but I don't think you can tie the land.
Okay, I get it. We'll work on that. Okay, thanks. Keep going real quick.
I'm having a hard time understanding what is qualifying for a building permit. If there's equipment that needs to be changed out quickly due to safety or operations, they shouldn't have to go through a building permit process. And then again in D, says non-county permits, but then it says any other applicable county departments, so that's conflicting. And then the technical expert review, I think that needs to be defined further. I'm not sure how, but it depends on who you're asking for technical review.
Okay.
How will that be chosen?
Okay. And the permits, we're going to be we've got some meetings scheduled with Weld County, because I've talked to COGCC and they don't issue building permits. So if you're putting a structure up over a piece of equipment, that requires a building permit. And some pads are like, if you're building a pad for a tank, the structural component of that pad needs a building permit. So we're trying to figure out what we're going to require as a building permit. Some of them won't and some of them will, but we'll define that. It's not every piece of equipment, but if it's a generator that's half the size of this room, which I've seen in some operations, that is encased in a building, you know, all of that's got to be structurally designed and whatnot. We want to make sure that it gets proper permits and inspected. In addition to that, Larimer County is taking over electrical permitting from the state, and so we'll be requiring those types of permits to come through at this level too. So there will be some, not all. We'll clarify that before we get to the Planning Commission. Sir?
I don't have anything to add to anyone else's comments.
Okay.
I do agree that if there is an instance where there might be an emergency situation, that should be written in, that even if a building permit would be needed, maybe it could be applied for retroactively. And just the goal is to get in and fix a situation.
Comfortable based on your discussion, Matt, about moving forward on potentially some small cases being not required.
Okay.
I agree. It should be special review for all permits. The only thing I would add is that I think there needs to be some additional procedures specific to oil and gas, increased radius for neighborhood notice and meetings to 2,500 feet.
Okay. Yes, Thomas.
Hey, Matt, can you... on the B2 neighborhood meeting submittal requirements, what are those? What does that mean? In other words, how much community or locally community input will you rely on during this review process?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Don't want to spend too much time on here. The process is this way. There's three steps in the process, and you can see them there under item B. The sketch plan review process in Larimer County is a conceptual stage. It's where somebody comes in and says, I'm going to do this activity at this location, and they give us a basis of information, maybe around siting or some of those things, and it allows us to make some preliminary conversation with them so that they know what to submit as part of their formal application. Generally speaking, at that stage, we provide notice to the neighbors. I agree. We'll have to look and see what the radius is. It's the 500 feet that comes out of state law, but staff has the ability to increase that based upon need or type of application, so we'll look at those numbers. Depending upon the amount of neighborhood input during that sketch plan process, we could waive the neighborhood meeting process, but typically that doesn't happen, and then the applicant is required to stage and hold a meeting on their own. We attend, but it's their meeting to explain what they're doing and take community input and try to improve their application based upon what they hear from the community. And then stage three is when, after you've gone through that, you submit your formal application with all the details and all the plans and studies. A full analysis goes on. During that process, the public is welcome to make comments and provide comments to us. That doesn't mean that they get changed in the application, but they could provide comments for consideration. And ultimately, we go through a public hearing process, which involves a hearing in front of the Planning Commission, which is always open for public comment, and then a follow-up meeting with the Board of County Commissioners that's also open for public comment, and then a decision is made by our Board of County Commissioners. So it's a fairly extensive process. It takes about 6 to 8 months to get through that process. Okay.
I was going to ask that question. How long?
I don't know what Weld County takes. The state is taking longer than that. And we're going to try to run either simultaneous or somewhere along parallel to the state process so that we'll keep that in mind. But we'll try to keep that in mind, and I'll work with the state to understand what their timing is. Yes, Andy?
I have a simple proposal for the administrative threshold. If an applicant submits a sketch plan, holds a neighborhood meeting, and supplies the 18 separate plans that are called for in Section 17.3, that they be considered for administrative review.
Okay. Take that into consideration.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on. 45 minutes left. We got to get going. 17.3 is the next section, and we're going to try to go through this rather quickly. I know it's hard because this is where the substance hits the road. These are all the standards that are out there. Really quickly, item 17.3A talks about general things, that the standards and requirements of all of the code will apply, because there's other things. We have a wetland section in our code that's not outlined in here, but we look at wetlands and require study based upon those. And that they meet all applicable state and federal standards and laws. There was a conflict here when it said when standards and regulations contained herein conflict with the standards and requirements of another agency, the stricter standard will apply. And I think that we'll probably modify that to say only if it's the COGCC that has a higher standard. The idea was COGCC and the State Health Department are going through rulemaking right now. And if we adopt a standard that's less than them and we have to rise to their level, we want that standard to apply. But if the fire district has a standard that's higher than our fire standards, they'll have to figure out how they're going to apply it. We're not going to move to their standard. We'll operate off of our standard code requirements. So does anybody have any issues with 17.3A? Just run through that really quick. Everybody thinks that that subsection is ready for consideration by the Board of County Commissioners. Show of hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. Don't believe that it's ready or think that it needs minor modifications. Those that think that it's just not ready, it's off track. Okay, so everybody's in concurrence? Good, moving on. Setbacks. After we had met the last time with you all, we were talking setbacks as it related to creating an administrative process, and we couldn't find the grounds for doing that. And when we were done, we studied setbacks that the COGCC had and some other things, and we threw a setback requirement into the code. And after meeting with our Board of County Commissioners and our Planning Commission, the result of this section that they gave us direction on was that we strictly follow what the COGCC adopts. And so right now, it's going to be our recommendation. I haven't had a chance to strike it out here, but item B will be rewritten to reflect that the county will use the setbacks as suggested by the COGCC. So let's consider our vote based upon that, okay? The county's regulations will be written such that the COGCC setback requirements that are outlined by the state regulations will be the setbacks we utilize in our evaluation.
Accept that.
We should disregard the ones here. Pardon me?
Those are less stringent than what you have here.
They're anywhere between 500 and 1,000. But you can't go less. You have to file an appeal, which means if you file an appeal at the state, you're going to have to file an appeal at the county. As they're written here. But we're saying strike that. Okay? Yeah. Unless you believe that it shouldn't be stricken, and that's your opinion. Okay?
Can I ask how that
came about? These numbers we put out there based upon 1,000 foot seems to be where the state is at most of the time at their upper level. You can appeal to be less than those numbers in the state level. You can be down at 500. You could even be less than 500. The 2,000 that came up was based upon the study that came out in December that had to deal with air quality and the potential impacts of to people within a certain distance of sites. And that study from our health department and others has not been made conclusive. And so there's still information going on around that. So our planning commission and Board of County Commissioners said, unless you can point to why the setback should be X, let's not go above and beyond what the state is doing at this point, because that's defensible. So,
and just for some context, my understanding is
if you're within 2,000 feet, it just raises the level of scrutiny with the application. It doesn't mean you have to meet the 2,000 foot setback. It just raises the level of scrutiny by the state. Yes.
Still 500 feet.
Yeah. Right. Correct. Okay, so let's vote on air quality section, or the setback section here of 17.3 point B. Those that believe that it's ready, meaning that you guys would support us operating pursuant to what COGCC has, please raise your hand. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those that think it's mostly ready. Those that believe it's not ready. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. I'm going to stick to you four. Why do you believe it's not ready?
Well, I was looking up.
Thank you.
I kind of agree with that. Number 4 and 5, I really like.
So if an application is submitted to the county, it should be the same as what's being submitted to the state. So we should have the same setback, right? So if they submit an application that's 500 feet from a house, and that's the only house in the way, and we're following the CGOCC regulations, I can't say that today, the state says that there's a variance process, and that variance process includes that. It says that if that property owner signs a waiver, that can be considered as part of the variance process in there. And so I would hope that if they're doing that at the state level, they're going to file an appeal at the county level and we'll have the same conversation. Then it will be, you know, who approves. If the county denies it and the state approves it, I guess there's a conflict there and you can't move forward because the county would have denied the application. So I don't know how those conflicts are going to be handled with the state in the long run. That's not been decided at the rulemaking process.
So I did have the question before we walked in the room written down. One house that we're in conflict with, here's our signed affidavit. If we're going with the state, then it all is the same.
We're going to follow the same process, and we'll use their setbacks and how they do appeal processes to those standards.
I don't agree with going with the state. I think we have an opportunity under 181 to make decisions for our county and what we consider acceptable for public health and safety. And I even feel like what's written in here is not quite protective enough, given I know that I've read through the entire study, but I don't know how we say it's okay for some on occasion to be exposed to these events. Even though they might be rare. And I don't think that we can say that's okay for kids playing outside at school to go less than that 2,000 feet. So I think we really need to look at setting our own. I also see no mention of wildlife consideration in that section.
Okay. I was actually, you know, happy with the regulations as I would point out here. And I think not only the state's report, but also a lot of emerging research raises potential concerns that should be considered, both nationally and internationally. And so I think in this case, it would be very smart to follow the precautionary principle, even though it's really difficult to have strong statistical evidence because of the nature of that type of experiments. So I'm pretty pleased with what is here. And I agree with Mary and others that we have an opportunity to protect our citizens a little more.
Okay, thanks. All right, good. So that covers setbacks. Moving into air quality, 17.3.C. You can see in here in almost every section now it talks about having a report and a plan. So the report is you tell us how you're going to comply with the rules and their standards that are outlined in here and how you will comply with other state and federal rules and what is your plan for mitigating if you have to mitigate something. And so that's the idea of that plan. And I know that the question came up a few minutes ago about a professional being brought on board for an evaluation. I think that was asked down at that end of the table. The idea was, is if we don't have the expertise on staff to evaluate a specific component of a development application, whatever that may be, it gives the county's director and county commissioners the ability to hire an outside source at the cost of the industry to come in and evaluate that. But it would be our selection as to who that is to maintain transparency and to make sure that it's not a slighted position. So that's where that was. So all of these next sections will have a plan and a report that will be professionally prepared, and we will evaluate them as part of the development review process. So having looked at section C on air quality, does anybody believe that that section is ready to be considered by the Planning Commission? If so, please show your hand. Those that believe that it's mostly ready. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, and those that believe it's not ready. 1. Okay. So let's start with the and go around the table. If you think it's ready, feel free not to comment. Let's just go around real quick. What do you think is missing in that section? The mic. Sorry. If you could. We're trying to capture everybody. Thank you, Richard.
I would, in the first, in C1.
Okay.
Comments, C3, you could strike following hydraulic fracturing and make that paragraph apply to all completions in well workovers, whether there was a hydraulic fracturing operation or not.
Okay.
Would lead to greater protection. C3A, I don't understand the first clause, except for very small productions. I think you could strike that and just require the closed loop pitless drilling and completion systems. That would apply to any drilling.
Okay.
4, unless no adequate electricity source is available or is technically infeasible. Electric power is rarely available at the site, has to be brought in. It's always technically feasible to bring it in, mm-hmm. but it's rarely economically feasible to bring it in. I'm not not sure that technically infeasible is the correct language. I don't have a better word, but as written, it would be, as an operator, I could say there is no electricity available. You could say, but it is technically feasible for you to get it. You could run it 5 miles and spend $2 million.
Yeah.
Well, I think that part of that would be two parts. You know, they're going to have to show us that it's not feasible to bring it in, not from an economic standpoint, from a technical standpoint. Economics doesn't play into the land use decision-making process.
Okay.
But if I was an intervening property owner whereby I wouldn't let you have access across my land with something, that might be a technical situation that creates that. But if there's another way to bring it in and it's reasonable, I mean, you know. Now, if I have to pull it 5 miles, that's probably unrealistic. I mean, there's some of those things. But
it's technically feasible.
Right. But they will have to demonstrate if they're not going to do it. If they're not going to bring electricity in, why are you not bringing it in? And they'll have to justify that as part of their application. The first premise is you electrify it. The second part is if you're not going to electrify it, you have just cause for why not. You have to convince the people that sit at the dais of that decision.
Okay.
Real quick, in C3, do we have a definition for reduced emission completions? I looked on the COGCC.
It's called a green completion in the COGCC regs.
It's called a what?
Green completion.
A green completion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We might use that term. We were talking about making that change.
Okay.
Apologize for not bringing that up earlier.
Okay. Yeah. Just so if we could use definitions that match. Like,
yeah. We want to marry up where we can.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks.
And then I also had confusion on number 4. I thought we had talked and voted on that earlier, talking about, like, asking that when feasible and as a best management practice, not as a mandate. And so I was curious where the mandate for electric was coming from. Because we had talked about it as a best management practice, but not as a mandate.
I think that was based upon the information that our health department was pulling from where the direction they're going at the state level with a lot of the regulations was that's the movement now is to go to electrical and to operate that way. And if you can't do that, then you come up with a best management practice beyond that.
Okay. And is that based on emissions, if they could prove
It's emissions, it's nuisance. I mean, it reduces generator noise. It reduces some of those types of things. So it had to do both with the type of equipment and the nuisance effects of them as well as some of the emissions.
Okay. I'm just wondering if just based on... ...require the electric unless you can show that your generator... certain noise and emission.
And that's always a possibility in the code. You can always appeal a standard, you know. The where we want you to start with it, compliance is here. And if you're not going to be here because you're going to go to an alternate source, whether it's fossil fuel driven or one of those types of things, then you're going to have to in your plan and report justify why that is and convince the leaders, the Board of County Commissioners and Planning Commission, why that should be an alternate way of doing it. But our first premise is we want you to be at this level.
Okay.
And preferably, if you're not going to be at that level, you're going to be at a level equal to or better than, not lesser than.
Okay.
I'm not sure that it will. I think it goes to four-phase power.
Where would you get electricity to be able to that much?
And that might be part of the equation.
Right.
Probably not.
You're not plugging a rig into it.
Right. Well, and that's inherently built into the code anyways. Section 22 of our code, which I so to address that throughout the context of the code, Section 22 allows an applicant who does not believe that they can comply with or believes that they have a better way of doing a standard an opportunity to appeal a standard. They have to justify it, they have to explain it, and then it gets considered by the board in the end. So if they can come in and say, hey, you know what, I got to have a different type of power source in order to operate this equipment, and the only way to do that is to do X, Y, Z, and that's unrealistic, that's technically infeasible or very hard to do, will make it unreasonable to put that facility. And then they can explain that to the board and the staff, and a position will be made by staff, and ultimately the board gets to make the decision whether or not that's acceptable. Gotcha.
Number five, it's asking.
Some of you guys threw in there. Pop this one.
Yeah, there's EPA standards for off-road vehicles and construction vehicles and regular vehicles. This is how we get, you know, just your standards for and even just like one of your cars. It's all through EPA. So you just want validation.
More comment? Then we got to really move.
One of the issues related to the air pollution related to oil and gas production is, you know, that it sometimes contributes to, you know, exceeding regulatory ozone limits in the state. And so I was thinking, you know, in 6G, you know, it says postponing or reducing operations with high potential to emit VOCs, and then as a spelling error, it should be or NOx. You know, I'm wondering, is it possible when we, you know, when you drive down I-25, you often see when we actually exceeding the regulatory ozone limits in the state, whether during those period of time that could be a mandate to maybe not use the big diesel-powered compressors or something like that, or if that is totally, you know, impossible to regulate at that level. Do you see what I'm saying? When we already are exceeding, the days where we're exceeding ozone limits, which are regulated, are there any ways by which we can go in and limit some of the VOC emissions from production of oil and gas? Does that make sense?
No, kind of ask again.
So well, I think you're saying
ozone is regulated in the state, right? Many times during the year, we exceed the regulatory limits for ozone. Mm-hmm. In part, oil and gas contributes to these ozone, not solely, right, but a part of it. Mm-hmm. Many, many things, such as traffic, is really difficult to limit, even though you could say you can't drive on Sundays. But could we do something similar to help, you know, limit the amount of ozone?
Beyond the oil and gas industry?
Yeah, could you say you can't operate via exceeding the ozone limits in Colorado, you know?
For all industry, we can.
Well, yeah, but that's not relevant to this application type.
Okay. But it's something for us to look into.
It's something that we can consider in the future with other land use regulations.
With high potential, right?
Right. Right.
That's especially important when you're exceeding regulatory limits for ozone.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I got you.
Matt, I have to leave, so I'm going to turn in my sheet here. But I'm in support of continuous air monitoring. I know that's not an individual operator thing, so that would be more a countywide program that we should look at. So I support that. And thank you to everybody. I have to go. But if anybody has interest in submitting a minority report, please email me. I will be submitting one. So thank you,
cool,
everybody.
Thanks.
No offense, of course.
No, we expect that. That's what we want.
There you go.
Thanks. All right. Section D, leak detection and repair. Not a whole lot of changes that we had in there from what is in there now. Does everybody believe that Section D is ready for a presentation to the Planning Commission? I got two. those that believe it's mostly ready. Okay, and those that believe it's not ready? All right. Two comments on why it's not ready. You want to start with Richard and give us one?
So, you know, I had this subcommittee of the ESAB that mm-hmm. three people who are from the industry, so I'm speaking about things that I have learned recently and understood recently. But in paragraph D3, we think that it currently says report within 24 and repair within 72. And we think that it should be... you have to repair it within 48, and if you haven't repaired it within 48, then you have to report it. And we want to encourage people to visit the site but not report every leak that they can fix themselves in a short period.
Okay. One more comment? Anybody? Go ahead. So it would only apply to an application that's approved under this process. So something that was already in existence wouldn't be subject to these regulations.
Okay. Yeah, if we can just
put it. Okay. Moving on. Odors. Item E, odor mitigation plan is going to be required. How they're going to deal with that. Does everybody who believes that this is ready for consideration by the board, by the Planning Commission? Who believes it's mostly ready? Okay, and those who believe it's not ready? Okay, I'll take two comments on this. Anybody down there? You guys kind of controlled the corner there. Okay.
So odor is kind of a subject, it's almost subjective. And I think there needs to be some quantification of odors. There are ways to measure odors and where the measurements are taken. Of course, I think you know all this. But for right here, someone has a complaint about odors. There's no saying even where the odor is coming from. They just have a complaint. There's no way to justify that.
Okay.
That's true. If it helps, we, when you have to, for odor regulation number two with the Air Pollution Control Division or Air Quality Control Commission's reg number two deals with odors, you have to be certified in odor. And that's, we have staff that will help with for public nuisance, and that's what the state has used in the past.
Yes,
with the eyes and nose sniff test.
But there's so many different dilutions to that, and if you go past,
it's hard to catch a violation.
The first two pages and dig into the swine part, they really have other, they have odors at the property line, and they also talk about odors at the receptor line, property line, mm-hmm. and there's different dilutions for all of that. And
yeah,
it's a little confusing.
It is hard, and it's like a 7-to-1 dilution factor.
Of it's like a 1 to 126.
And like you said, the swine facilities are much different, but that's kind of the only tool we have right now, having certified noses in the health department, but to use for our public nuisance complaints. But that's kind of what they're going off of here as well, because the Air Pollution Control Division used to approve it as a means, the sniff and sight test. But we're going more towards, we'd like to see more of it mechanically, you know, like using an instrument to detect this.
This almost reads like a public nose to me. I mean,
okay.
Matt, if I may, just really quick on number five, we're talking about the odor mitigation plan, and it says the strategies may include the following, and then that list is a list of prohibitions. And so is that what we're wanting in the plan, or is, are those the things that we're prohibiting? Because I don't, like, I don't, I feel like that should be two separate sections or reworded differently. Mm-hmm. Were we going with what should be in the plan, or was it for the prohibitions?
Okay. That's a good point. We'll look at that.
Okay.
Yeah, I got what you're saying there. Didn't read it that way, but I see how you get that. All right. Water quality and water bodies.
One more thing, Matt. 5E, enclosed shale shakers are not commonly used, commonly available, or safe.
The shakers?
5E.
Yeah, or that they're just not putting an odor calmer in there to hide the smell, that it's eliminating the smell, that you're not, if you're just doing something that masks the smell, but the smell's still there, then you're just perfuming it. There's other ways to eliminate the smells or to minimize the smells that are associated with some. Yes.
On that same
That's
topic,
how I understood it.
On that same topic, if you had a drilling mud that didn't smell, does this say you have to add an odorant? Mm. It does.
Okay. All right. Water quality and water bodies. Question one, those that believe it's ready for presentation to the Planning Commission. Those believe that it's mostly ready. And those that believe that it's not ready. All right, I'll take a couple of quick comments on that.
So right now, the way they're doing baseline monitoring is heavily flawed. And the reason it's heavily flawed is because by law, they're not required to put monitoring wells in necessarily the direction of the groundwater flow path. And that's very, very important. Right now, it's about a radius around the drilling pad at which you need to monitor. They don't have to put it upstream and downstream of the hydraulic fracturing activity. So I think it's very important that we change the way by which we do the groundwater monitoring. We need, number one, to know the direction of the groundwater as it flows away from the drill pad site. And then we need to ensure that we have monitors in place that can capture potential spill or impact. That does not need to be an advanced sensor. Mm-hmm. It could be simply something that measures salinity increases. Often we have a little more salt, you know, and salt is a conservative trace. It will move as fast as water and be a good indicator for impact. So it's not very expensive. It can be done pretty cheap. So that's just something, you know, how we do the monitoring. I think the verbiage is okay. There's nothing wrong. What we don't see here is that it's a flawed approach, and it's been flawed since the get-go. That's
okay.
A major comment.
Thanks, Thomas. So let's start down here, because you've been quiet all night.
Sure. Only one quick comment in paragraph 2, the last sentence. Fire it, but we don't.
Yep. We were gonna have that component stricken because it's posted at the department. The COGCC does the posting on that already, so it shouldn't be something that's added onto it. So, go ahead, Craig. We had a discussion on that yesterday, and that was the same approach that we came up with, the not in the floodway, in the flood fringe, you'd probably have to get floodplain review approval from our boards and whatnot. We were kind of inclined to say that you shouldn't do it in the floodplain, but there is that approach of doing it in the floodplain, fringe portion of the floodplain and not in the floodway. So we'll take a look at that, but there might be a subtle difference. Right.
That's okay, but
right.
The flood fringe, there's...
You don't want it in the damage path of a flood.
Right. So, but this is saying...
And that was potentially discussed at a staff level about that, but I think we were kind of floating around. You could do it in the flood fringe if you got floodplain review board approval. That'll require special. But we'd highly discourage that is probably what we would do. Because there's probably lots of other alternatives in a drilling area that can be accomplished.
You know, some places it's 2 miles wide. In the setbacks of the houses. And
gotcha.
So it is quite limiting.
Gotcha. Okay.
There are backwater areas of the floodplain where equipment can be anchored and has been for years, and it's out of the damage path. Mm-hmm.
And they're generally in the floodplain, yeah.
But it's in the flood plain. Yes. It's a flood fringe.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
And I'm curious.
Okay.
There's been a blanket ban of wastewater injection wells. And I'm just.
We were not going to.
What went into that?
We're going to strike that from ours. And that would be if you're going to do a wastewater injection well site, then you're going to go through an oil and gas permit for that. That'll be a permitted item that you have to go through. Okay. Especially up north, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So I've got that, and we've discussed striking that out and not omitting those from being allowed in the county. Spills and releases, item G. Those that believe that the spills and releases section is ready for consideration by the Planning Commission. Okay. We have four there. Those that think it's mostly ready. Those that think it's not ready. One, two. Okay, real quick, why is it not ready? Okay.
Again, the reporting limits come into play as there were in the leaks. I think you really need to look at how much you want reported and what the volume is that come in. Mm-hmm. The spill prevention control and countermeasure plan shall be submitted, but it can't be actually designed until after the equipment is in place. And then also what is defined as the satisfaction of the local emergency response authorities.
Do you want to speak to that real quick?
I think I'm trying to remember how we did this. See all spills. And I think it's more because CDPHE would oversee it if it meets, they need to be contacted. You guys are all probably familiar, well, those in industry are probably familiar with the national response reporting lines that you have to do. And I think it's a certain number of barrels outside. This was just to make sure that, you know, if we see, I think stained soils or something like that, that it's excavated off-site and disposed, something of that 25-gallon capacity or more. It's more just to see that there isn't future contamination to occur from it. So it would be at the discretion of your local agents, whether it be like the hazardous waste fire department coming out, or that branch of the fire department, or if it's one of our hazardous waste inspectors coming out to verify the leak's been adequately cleaned up and to see if more additional soil or water samples need to be taken or not.
Last thing, because I got to move us through the rest of this in 5 minutes.
I just have a very quick clarifying question as to what Kate was indicating, the SPCC. I believe that has to be on file with the state within a certain period of time after it's operational. And so maybe it's just a timing issue on when the county would receive a copy.
Okay.
Also, COGCC has a tiered approach. It's a currently 5 barrels outside of secondary containment and requiring a report of 1/2 a barrel, which is 25 gallons inside secondary containment where it's not going anywhere, is unnecessary, doesn't protect anyone, creates undue work for the emergency responders, because basically there's nothing happening there. So a tiered approach mirroring COGCC might make more sense.
And that's true. We don't have any specifics on if it's within or outside.
The spills are likely to occur around the tanks, and those are going to be in secondary containment. Yeah. So
I think what we really wanted was outside, because we know that your impervious your barriers. Yeah, I think we should probably just emphasize outside.
And then one final thing, 125% of the total capacity of on-site containment. Currently, COGCC and EPA require 110% of the largest vessel. If you require 125% of all vessels, makes your containment and your footprint a lot bigger to hold all that. And the odds of that happening are minimal. So you would at least double the size of a production facility to be able to contain all of the vessels inside there.
Okay.
The COGCC and EPA talk about largest vessel.
Okay. All right. So clearly we're not going to get done at 6 o'clock, but I don't want to, you know, we're only about halfway through. So we're just going to take votes on this. Yes? One last comment, then I'm going to move us off of this. Yes.
So I'm advised as to number three, quite a bit like what Andy said, 110% of the largest vessel and following EPA's rule. And also similar on number five about outside the containment area. And lastly, they also told me that we ought to provide for a test during the shakedown period, the first 90 or 180 days, because there's a likelihood of a spill then, and there's nothing in here or the state reg about shakedown test during the first 180 days. And lastly, at number five, they like to see earthen berms permitted, and we weren't sure if similar impervious surfaces might allow earthen berms. Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Matt.
Thanks, sir. Okay. So for the remainder of this, I guess I'm just going to ask you guys to make votes on it. We're just going to document those votes. We can either do that by having you just do it on your papers and submit them back to me. That's fine. And then we can move on. Unless there's something really out there that's outstanding that you think needs to be discussed, we'll just go ahead and proceed that way. Fill out the rest of your page, get it to me, and then we'll move on. Yes, sir.
In the interest of time, if we have specific comments.
You can, yes. Okay. Uh-huh. And then just.
And if we have them not ready, we can make a note.
Yeah, or pipe me an email or something like that, yes. Uh-huh. I still want to get you out of here in the next couple of minutes. I want to talk about where we're going from here. So we're going to take your feedback, and our core team will sit down and look at what comments we heard tonight and what you're going to be submitting to us. We're going to draft up a new version of that as best we can. I can't guarantee that all changes are going to be made that you suggest or whatnot, but we'll consider them. And then we're going to prepare staff report, and we've only got a couple of weeks to get this done. So we'll prepare a staff report. In that staff report, we will represent where there are differences of opinion as best we can. So where you guys think that we're missing out on the mark, we'll try to identify that both in both directions, whether it should be more restrictive or less restrictive, so that everybody's represented as best we can. That report will be done early February. On February the 19th, we will be presenting this to the Planning Commission. It will be in this room. Starting at 6:30, and everybody's welcome to show up and make comments. You get 2 minutes to talk to the board on that. So 2 minutes is not a lot of time, but if you focus your thoughts on specific things that you think will improve it, we'd appreciate that. So That will be happening in February. Depending upon where the Planning Commission goes with things, it's expected that on March 23rd, was it, Leslie? I think it was March 23rd. We'll be presenting the final draft to the Board of County Commissioners for their consideration. So, again, that's an open public hearing. Everybody's welcome to come, voice their comments. It'll be a two-minute comment period allowed for that. And so that's the direction we're currently running with this. Tomorrow, the public comment portion of these set of regulations will come to a close, and then we'll begin our final work on this project. Is there any questions on that? Or how you might participate? We will represent to the board, and we'll tally your votes and whatnot, and we'll represent what the task force represented here tonight as a result of your conversations. Again, I appreciate everything you guys have done with us and helped us out on this, and I look forward to seeing you guys in the not-too-distant future.
Thank